Welcome to the Post Game Plan. My name is Ali Samani. I'd like to introduce myself. I am a former NBPA representative. I used to work in the Career Development Department. And what I'm creating here is the Post Game Plan. And the real goal is to get out as many resources and knowledge as possible from former and current NBA players about what they're doing off the court, and really focusing in and seeing some of their achievements and some of the things that they can kind of hand down to aspiring basketball players, as well as some of our current players, about how to navigate their way through being a professional NBA player and preparing for the future. Be it, you know, 5 years down the road or 10 years down the road, you always have to prepare for a future. And today we have a very special guest, my first guest, in fact, and I'm very happy and proud to have him joining us. His name is Sherrone Wright, and he's actually the sixth overall pick in the 1994 NBA draft by the Philadelphia 76ers. He played four seasons at the NBA, played with the Sixers and the Raptors, named NBA All-Rookie Second Team, and he's also played in Spain, Poland, South Korea, as well as the Netherlands, and I'm so happy to have him on board. Sherrone, how are you doing today, man?
Thanks, Ali, man. I'm glad to do it, man. Glad to be here. Got a lot to... I know from my perspective, it's going to be really easy to talk about what guys can do and what guys are doing, and along with myself, after the game is over.
Okay.
So it's an interesting subject.
Excellent, man. Excellent. I think there's a lot of knowledge out there, and I'm really hoping to tap into some of your experiences. I'd really like to take you down like memory lane here, and I might get you a little nostalgic, so I apologize for that, but you know, it's going to be a great interview. I really want to know, what age did you enter the league in?
I think I was 22.
22, okay.
I was 22 years old. And I did not understand the basics of the game.
Okay.
In terms of off the court. You know, on the court, I could play with anybody at that time, but off the court, you know, I didn't understand money. I didn't understand career objectives that I'm trying to do now. At that time, you know, I was wide-eyed. I did not know. I thought the game would go on forever, basically.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the sentiment shared among most NBA players, or at least the aspiring ones coming into the league. Now, you played at Clemson collegiate mm-hmm. ball for all 4 years. Is that right?
All 3 years.
All 3 years.
I really, really felt like I was ready to go from a basketball standpoint. I needed to go ahead and go to the NBA at that time. So.
Okay, that's perfect. Now, I mean, coming into the league, what tips or advice was your major concentration on basketball? I mean, there's obviously, as a professional athlete, it's very hard to... You know, like in any sport, right? Like in anything that you do, you have to put in a lot of time to being great at it, right? And I know being the sixth overall pick, you know, you have to put in a lot of time to get to that position. Now, did you ever even think about, when you first entered the league, did you ever even think about what's going to happen after basketball, or how do I manage my money? How do I do a number of things in my first year? What are the things that I should spend on? How do I pick an agent? I mean, what are those questions that were quandering through your head?
I was basically a little lucky because I come from a line of kids that played at Southwest High School in Macon, Georgia. So our coach, who recently died last week, he made sure that we had a broad base of people that we could talk to. All of us guys that went to college and some that went pro. When I was picking an agent, you know, I just really wanted the best opportunity, someone who could put me and put my career first so that I could have the opportunities to grow myself on the court and off. And I think I did well with that. You know, would I do it a little different? Yes. Now that I know the business a little bit better. But a lot of the questions were, you know, do you know how to handle money? Can you handle money? Can you handle your career? I didn't have a publicist. There were there was nobody out there just handling my affairs. So I had to kind of do that on my own and so forth. You know, so we made a lot of mistakes about different things, you know. And, you know, it's something to learn from, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, so playing, I think you entered in 94. So That being said, I mean, what year do you think you started considering, okay, what are my post-career options? What am I going to do? Well, actually, you know, before that, let's preface this. Let me ask you, if you don't mind, did you graduate from Clemson? Or what did you study, actually?
I did not. I studied history.
Okay.
And I studied a lot of different things, African-American studies.
Okay.
Oratorical studies, you know, so... You know, I had a broad base of things that I was interested in.
Excellent, yeah.
But ultimately, you know, me leaving as a junior kind of hurt that.
Absolutely.
And it hurt the fact that I needed to go ahead and finish. And, you know, so I'm in the process of doing that now after all these years.
Oh, that's fantastic, though, man. But that's very commendable. I respect that. Now, that being said, you entered in 1994. When do you think, I mean, you played four seasons, when do you think you started thinking really seriously, given the, you know, average, did you know, like, the average NBA, you know, career span was about 5 years? Like, do players know about that? And when did you start thinking about, like, what's my post-game plan?
I just never did.
Okay, really?
I never thought about it, and that's what I'm saying. You know, I never thought about it. I just thought it just goes on forever, and, you know, certain things pop up. Halfway through my first year with the Raptors, when I got traded there, I mean, we had a team that was destined to do some good things at some point.
Right.
And then I go off and tear a muscle out of my back, and I was on a roll averaging about 18 to 19 points a game, and then it just tore me up. And the second year, the same thing happened. Third year, I get into a really huge car accident. So it's just little things add up, and you have to just kind of be – and I think at that point, that's when I started thinking, like, wow, this is not going to last forever. So I started trying to, you know, get into small businesses and things like that with no possible training.
Really? Okay.
You know, and that's the one thing that I regret, you know, is that I didn't take business when I was in college. I mean, business administration or business, you know, these are the things that, you know, as young kids, they're not being taught this because the rule from the NBA standpoint is, okay, you do 1 year and you go out. You don't have, that's not enough time to learn how to handle money. I would encourage all players, all sports, to learn to take care of your money, learn to take care of yourself, learn to take care of your affairs, pay your own bills, things like that. Don't rely on a company through an agent to do that. I was fortunate to have some good people around me, but if I could do it any different, I would go before that and study it more at Clemson. That way I wouldn't have to use anybody. And there's no funny business from my standpoint. You know, I was... No one took any money from me or anything like that, but I'm just saying that it's better. I mean, you're paying fees, you're paying all type of stuff for them to do that, something that you can do on your own if you're well equipped.
Right.
So,
okay, so, I mean, you said that you kind of entered the professional world, and the first thing that you thought was a possibility was opening a small business. Now, I mean, I kind of want to dissect that a little bit. I want to understand, like, why did you think, you know, why was business the avenue that you chose? Was it, you know, I mean, yeah, it's an open floor. I mean, I'd love to hear why you thought business was the avenue.
Well, for me, I have this little thing that I say, and this is not going to be based on the question, but I believe that all NBA guys should wait until they're done playing to open a business.
Okay.
If you're going to partner with somebody, then that's one thing.
Right.
But if you're going to open a business and start, you know, a business with your own money, you need to be finished playing.
Right.
Because then you're there all day, every day. You can't micromanage a business.
It's very, yeah.
You can't. Okay. And I think if you're there every day, I had two or three barbershops in the Atlanta area.
Okay, barbershops.
And they were doing well in the summers. I could tell the difference. In the summers when I was there, they were doing well. We were making money. We were providing a great service. But then once I wasn't there, you know, it was a lot of, you know, nitpicking. A lot of stuff wasn't going on the right way.
Right.
So I think that when the guys that lose the money, I've lost money in things, you know.
Absolutely.
The guys that lose money business-wise, a lot of it is because they're not there every day.
Okay.
You got to be doing, you know, the person who started McDonald's, Ray Kroc, whatever his name, he was there every day for 15 years. When he already was a millionaire, he still was there every day. You know, that's what you have to do. Bob Johnson at BET, he was there every day. You know what I mean? You got to do it every day in order to make it run the way you want it to rerun. If not, then, you know, people are going to take advantage of you. People are going to be skimming money off of you. They're going to be doing little small things. There's a tax situation. There's, you know, just business taxes. There's everything that you have to know.
So, I mean, did you work with anyone with the initial barbershops that you opened in Atlanta?
Not at all.
Not at all. Wow. So you did it all by yourself, eh?
I did it all by myself. I bought all the equipment. I got the lease. I mean, you know, it was – I loved the business, too. It was great. When I was there, I loved it. But yeah. When I wasn't there, you can see it going down south. You know?
Right, right.
Really bad, you know.
So were there – when you kind of were managing your businesses, and I'm assuming this was after your playing days, or I guess it was during, my fault. Now, were there icons that you kind of looked up to from a business standpoint, thinking, you know, I really admire those individuals? You kind of alluded to the founder of McDonald's as well as the founder of BET. Now, did you idolize those individuals from a business standpoint?
Sure. I mean, there were people that I felt like were pioneers, especially guys. You know, I have an affection for guys that used to play sports.
Right.
And then they get into their own business and they make a success out of it because they waited. Maybe they put a little money into it while they were playing, but they weren't hands on.
Right.
They weren't hands on. But once they retired, then they just went full speed into it, and it's a success because they were there every day. Like, I'll give you an example, is Reggie Slater.
Okay.
From who played with us with the Sixers.
Okay.
With the Raptors. And Reggie owns, when he first got started, he was out of the league, and he started some Jiffy Lube places where you get a, you know, the oil change up and stuff like that.
Right.
In your car. And he never did this when we were playing. He didn't do any of that. And that vehicle opened up for him to start Slater Sports Zone, which is kind of like a gym, but it does all type of tournaments for basketball and volleyball. So, you know, he's successful in that way because he was there to see it.
Right.
And to process it. But if you're not there, you know, that's how a lot of guys get taken advantage of. When I was one of those guys, you know, I got taken advantage of by myself.
Right.
You know, in certain things. I would say don't ever invest in something unless you're hands-on.
No.
Like, you know what I mean? Unless you check it out as well, but unless you're hands-on.
Did you create, like, a business plan for something like this, or was it, you know, more like intuition? Like, I know this is going to work. This is a good opportunity here. I have the knowledge to make this happen. I know what I need. Like, what was it?
I feel like a business plan is a good thing. You know,
okay.
It's an outline that you need. But some of that stuff is overrated.
I agree. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, they tell you in school, where's your business plan? Like, banks don't really want to see that.
Right.
They want to know, do you have anything to put down? What's their risk? What collateral do you have? You know, they don't want to see a business plan. They want to see it, but it's not as important as what you have to put down in case, just in case something really bad happens.
Right.
You know what I mean? They say in business, try to use other people's money, then don't use yours.
Right.
But in some cases, you have to use yours. And you
right.
have to, you know what I mean? So I just felt like, you know, when I hear people say that, that's a little bit overrated.
Right, right. And I'm sure that, I mean, there are some things about the business plan which are good, obviously, but, you know, doing a little bit of market research obviously helps, you know? Now,
yeah, it does.
Let me ask you, within the locker room, do individuals speak about the types of businesses they have, the types of things that they're doing over the summer off the court, or is it, you know, does anyone ever talk about some of the things that are going on in their lives off the court?
No.
From a more
no,
career
I,
standpoint?
I think the locker room is always sacred.
Okay.
My 4 years or 3 years with the Raptors were precious to me and the guys that we had because we were so close, all those guys, young and old. But we would talk on the plane.
Okay.
We would play cards, Alvin Robinson, myself, you know, Doug, D. Brown, all of us would talk on the planes, and then we would talk about business stuff then. Like before in the locker room, we never talked about business because that's not the time for it. But,
right.
You know, when you have the camaraderie that we had, especially those first 2 years with the Wizard and Tracy and all of us, like we were all very close. So Oliver Miller. So we saw one thing you can do with your peers, you can learn from mistakes that your peers make. So, you know, if I saw – Damon Stoudemire making a mistake business-wise, I'm not going to do it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? We learn from each other, so.
And do you think enough of those types of stories were shared, or do you think there should be more kind of avenues to share those stories?
There wasn't, and there should be. But I also agree that the $100 million deals and none of that was happening at that time. The deals that, like, say, Antoine Walker had.
Right.
You know, that stuff wasn't prominent then. So guys weren't making that type of money.
Right.
So you didn't see it wasn't like, okay, ooh, he lost this type of money, da 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 da.
Right.
You know, nowadays, people, the contracts are so much bigger that, you know, if a guy loses $20 million, then they looking at it like he's stupid.
Right.
How about the fact that he didn't have the awareness that he needed? He didn't have the tutelage that he needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't have the, you know, like, and I'm not speaking on Antoine because Antoine's a great guy.
Right.
It's not that. I'm just saying that, you know, maybe he didn't have, you know, the right tutelage about things, or maybe he didn't have the right people in his corner. And if you have those things, you know, and a lot of the stuff that he was mixed into, it was while he was playing, too. And again, that's why I say that, you know, he was playing then. If he had not been playing, he could have been hands-on.
So what I'm hearing here is, I mean, you're really emphasizing the fact that it's so important to have the ability to put in time to whatever you're doing, because when you're playing, when you're playing and when you're trying to manage a business at the same time or whatever endeavor you're doing, if you're not hands-on, there's a high likelihood that it could potentially fail.
Sure. Sure. You've been around the league. You know,
absolutely.
You work for the players. So you know how grueling the season is. It's
right.
Grueling. And you don't have time to be calling banks and dealing with employees and things
right.
like that. You just don't have time for that. So that's how guys get taken advantage of. They entrust someone who's never been in that situation, and they never had that amount of money coming in. So they start skimming off the top. They start doing bad things. They start doing things that are not conducive to a successful business. So, you know, I mean, and I'm not speaking from experience like I'm some great IBM guy who's done so much.
No, absolutely, but these are...
I've had my share of lumps, and that's why I can sit and say...
Exactly.
You know, what lumps I took. You know, I took huge lumps.
Exactly.
And I would love to talk to the Players Association guys when they come, because I want to warn them. I want to let them know, like, hey, man, watch your money.
Right.
Watch what you're doing. Watch your business. If you're going to have a business while you're doing that, that's one thing. But make sure that you're hands-on.
Right. Right.
And,
I mean, managing a business is not easy.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not.
Yeah. Imagine that with basketball, with the NBA schedule, and you know how grueling that is.
Absolutely,
I mean, it's
gonna
be crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's gonna be crazy.
What I mean, you know, sometimes, a lot of the times, what I hear is players going into businesses. Now, I mean, I know there's certain correlations with a basketball player's characteristics and the characteristics that are encompassed in having a business. I mean, there's competitiveness, there's something about passion. Now, are there things outside of that you got yourself involved in from a career development standpoint? And what do you think were those factors that drew you to a business as opposed to anything else at that time?
I think you try to rely you start thinking that you, there's that word again, micromanage. You start thinking that you can do it. You know, you
right.
can. You know, and then there's the friend factor. And I say that because guys coming into the NBA have friends, you know, handling their stuff. You know? And maybe from a loyalty standpoint, that's good. But from a business standpoint, that's bad.
Okay.
Friends and business do not mix.
Okay.
It doesn't.
Okay.
And I've had that happen to me.
Okay.
You know, one of my friends, you know, who I felt were real comfortable about, and you know, it didn't work out. You know,
right.
Not that he was crooked or nothing, but it just didn't work out. And because everybody doesn't have your same interests.
Exactly.
I was watching the Chloe and Lamar Odom show.
Okay.
The other day, and he has a best friend that he entrusted. Like he's known him for years, and he entrusted him with his clothing line.
Right.
So Chloe, his wife, gets on and she starts looking at their website, and they're, all the orders are gone. Like, there's no more clothes on the website. What the hell you got a website for and there's no clothes on it?
Right.
You order jeans and all that. Nothing was there. You know, nothing was there. So, and this was like months. This would be for months. Imagine how much money he lost.
Yeah.
Just for months that people come on the site and trying to, just because, I mean, not that the merchandise is all that, but like he's Lamar Odom. So he's going to have like people going on just to buy stuff, just to buy it.
Right. Exactly.
And here he is, doesn't even have orders because his guy is tripping. His best friend is just like wilding out. Like he's not even like putting things on there. You
right.
know? And That's what I mean by friends and business, man.
So it's really important, obviously, to judge. You know, and this happens, obviously, in the world outside of sports as well. I mean, many times you hear about stories about family and business, friends and business, and how sometimes they don't mix. So I guess, in reality, what it really comes down to is finding a partner that has the same passion as you, maybe is,
right.
And I guess more importantly even, is bringing a skill set that you're probably not bringing to the table. So you guys can work together and, you know, bridge those two assets to make a really strong foundation, right?
That was the ESPN magazine, Allie. The ESPN magazine, it was all about Michael Vick. You should pick that up.
Okay.
And Michael Vick, when he first got into the NFL, one of his friends worked at AirTran, like the airport.
Right.
AirTran Airlines. So he quit his job to work for Michael Vick. But he went right back to AirTran and made a big deal for AirTran and Michael Vick. And now when you go through Atlanta, I'm from the Atlanta area, you see Michael Vick, well, you used to before the dog fighting thing. You can see him on commercials for AirTran. There'll be billboards with Michael Vick. That's like a multi-billion, $1 million business.
Absolutely.
And that contract, he negotiated that for Michael Vick. So I'm saying, of course, he probably got maybe $800,000, you know, $700,000 because of that from his boss.
Right,
I
right.
Mean, because, it, you know, that was a multi-million-dollar deal. My point in saying it is, you know, it works sometimes.
Absolutely.
The situation with Maverick Carter and those guys that are in LeBron's camp, it may work. You know, I'm
right.
not saying that. But I'm saying usually on a scale of 8 between 10, on a scale of 10, 80%, 8% of the time, it's a bad look.
Right. Know? Okay. So what did you, like, divulge in after the barbershops didn't do as successful as you had imagined?
There was, and I'm going to completely be honest with you, there
okay.
was a different deal that I made with a company, and I was out of basketball at this time. So,
okay.
With a produce company that was servicing people all of grocery stores all over. And I thought it was a great deal. Not good deal, but great deal.
Okay.
Turned out to be sour, you know, and I lost money in it. And it's just, that's just nature of things. And, you know, but I should have did my due diligence on that, and I didn't. And, again, this was brought to me by people that I love and know. So, I mean, you know, there's good stories and there's bad ones.
Absolutely.
You know, I got ones to tell you. You know, I'm not, I know you, so I know this program is going to be good. And I feel like, hey, you know, I can tell that, especially if there's a young kid out there that's playing NBA or doing something NFL, and they listen to this, you know, so.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. You know, I think that, you know, you bring up a good point. Obviously, you can see correlations within, you know, the athlete world as well as, you know, even the business world, where if you don't do your due diligence, if you're not doing the right homework on the investment opportunities that you're given, there's an opportunity there that, you know, things can go sour and things could fail. And I think it sounds like it's going back to time. And if you don't allocate the right amount of time to things, something negative could happen out of the situation.
Sure.
Yeah.
It can.
Okay.
And it usually does.
Okay. So tell me about like some of the, I guess, did you work with any foundations at the time? From a foundation perspective, what were your, I guess, initiatives that you were partaking in? When did you first start your own foundation or supporting a foundation?
Yeah.
And how did you decide which one was right?
There was, in my hometown of Macon, Georgia, there's a Harriet Tubman Museum, and there's also a Boys and Girls Club. And I knew, because I was a Boys and Girls Club member, I would be very integral in what they did in the Georgia and making it in the middle Georgia area. So I started giving money and my time and having two or three camps there, just regular basketball camps, skill camps. I started doing that. And, you know, before long, I was on the board of directors
in
the council. And I have a big passion for the big brother, big sister, adopt a role model type places that you see now, and along with the everything that kind of goes with that. So for me, having a foundation was just quite natural. So I started my foundation actually 3 years ago, but we really, really started going public with it last year. I know you saw, we talk on Facebook a little bit about my score foundation and my
exactly.
camp and this past year, you know, we had Jerry Stackhouse there and Dale Davis and two prominent lawyers, you know, lots of speakers. All our counselors were college players and high school players that wanted to give back. And so, you know, it works out, and all of our proceeds always go to charities. And those charities may sometimes be kids groups or who need money and things like that. We just kind of share it around, share the wealth, and it works out better the right way. We pay it forward, basically.
Absolutely. Now, tell me a little bit about that. I mean, you have this SCORE Foundation, and tell me a little bit about giving back and what it means to you and how you feel that, you know, that may or may not be important for, you know, whether it's a former basketball player or current basketball player or even an aspiring basketball player. Like, what is it about giving back that, you know, it seems like it's played a prominent role in your life?
Well, SCORE is actually taking over my life right now.
Really?
SCORE means Saving Children with Outreach, Recreation, and Education. And what we do, we make sure that no kid is left behind. And we say that because we want to create programs that help kids. We know, and that, one of the things that I always notice and I say to kids is that, and I say to people is that when you talk to a kid that's at risk, may go into a gang or may go into a crime or, you know, a teenage pregnancy or whatnot, you got to give them options to do things. You can't go in front of a kid and say, well, don't do that. And he'll say, why? And then you'll say, because I said so, because we didn't do that as a kid. Oh, when I was a kid, we didn't do that. Well, if you don't give the kids today an option about why they shouldn't, or if they say, okay, sir, I won't do it, but what else am I going to do? You know, you got to give kids an option to do better. You got to give them technical schools. You got to give them financial aid way that they can pay for college or, you know, or something like that. Some of our biggest dropouts in the history of mankind have been geniuses.
Right.
You know, so people don't see that, and they say, okay, well, now he dropped out of school, which means he got a GED. There are senators right now with GEDs.
Right.
You know, it's just what it is. So,
absolutely.
My SCORE Foundation really facilitates change, and I think if we can continue to do that, then we'll be something special down the road, too.
So who do you work with the SCORE Foundation to make it effective, efficient? How do you measure success in your program? And where is it based out of? Like, I'd love to – is it based out of Atlanta or L.A.?
It's in Atlanta, based in Atlanta and Macon area.
Okay.
We do a lot of stuff in the Macon area because it's being infested with gangs and things like that now, murder, things like that. And we just really want to make some change, man, you know.
Okay.
Change is not going to come if you're silent, and change won't come if you're not active, you know. And so for us, you know, that's what we mean, and we mean every child. We don't mean just a couple of kids that are on the north side of town or – the rich side of town. We need those kids, but we need the poor kids, the kids who have, you know, no luck and no base and balance to their life.
Okay.
So we understand that, you know, and this is something that's really important.
And are you guys working with a particular foundation to partner with, or is it something that you guys are doing on your own initiative?
Well, we're basically an online thing, but I like to call us a group and not a foundation, because a foundation means, you know, a little bit different than it's a group. And I don't want to just make us, it's just about me and my mom and my family and my supporters. If it's a group, then that's a 2 million people group.
You know, absolutely.
A 2 million person group. So, you know, it reaches from Atlanta to all the way to Toronto. It
okay.
reaches to Barrie, to
okay.
to Nova Scotia, you know, anywhere, Saskatchewan.
Okay.
It reaches everywhere.
Okay.
From that standpoint, you know. But if it's a foundation, it's based. And I don't want SCORE to be based.
Okay.
I want it to be all around.
Now, just, you know, let's, I'd love to just tap back into the career development from the professional side and, you know, being a part of the game. Now, what do you think would be important? When do you think players or rookies, for example, should start making their own career game plan, like their after basketball type of plan? When do you think that should start for an NBA player entering
the league? I think it should always be in your mind. You know, I think you should always have that in the back of your mind. Now, going on and doing something about it, I go back to my theory, which is, well, I think wait. Like I said, wait until you're done.
Okay.
That don't mean you can't have ideas and lay some groundwork for a couple of things, but if you're gonna put money into it, then wait.
Okay.
You're able to see it. You know, because that way you're okay. You know, you can take, you know, different risks that way.
So maybe talking to a career counselor, I guess preparing, taking courses would be something that could be possible for some of these young guys.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Now, what would you know, this is like kind of my closer kind of question. What would you tell, a young Sharon Wright, 22 years old, with the knowledge that you have today, what would you tell that individual if he was standing in front of you, you know, with all the experiences that you've kind of gone through to prepare yourself for life after basketball? What would you tell that individual?
Well, the first thing I would say is when you have your quote-unquote posse, don't have a posse. Have a no man, a person that's going to tell you no, that's not afraid to tell you no.
Okay.
Knowing that you got money in the bank, that's one thing, but then when someone sees something crooked in a situation, they're not afraid to tell you no.
Okay.
Your spirituality means a lot, I think, because you know, you can only pray, you know, when there's something bad or something like that. You got to pray all the time, and you got to be able to have some type of spirit in your life that'll guide you through tough times. You know?
Right.
You know, those are the two things that stand out for me. I would say for anyone that wants to be, you know, think about themselves after basketball, I would say line up some people that, you know, people that you admire, that they admire. You know, good company travels well together.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So you're not going to have a president of a bank who makes $1 million every week hanging out with a, you know, axe murderer or something.
Exactly.
That's not going to happen. And I tell my kids all the time, well, ball players hang out with ball players.
Right.
You know what I mean? Journalists hang out with ball players. You know, we don't, you know, there's a circle that we have with athletes that we keep, you know.
So networking is absolutely important.
It's really important.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, Sharon, man, I really want to thank you for this interview, and I know my viewers really enjoyed this. Once again, I really appreciate your time, my friend, and I will definitely keep in touch. And, you know, I'd love to hear more about how the program is going. Hopefully in a couple months we can re-loop and hear how things have progressed along the way for you, man.
Awesome.
All right, my friend.
Awesome, brother.
All right.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.